Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, France 24, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. In yet another story that is constantly changing, China reacts to the Trump-suggested tariffs. The point here is that it is strengthening Xi Jinping in both China and much of Southeast Asia, but could expose vulnerabilities down the road. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Well, 2 of the world's superpowers are also the globe's top 2 economies and are intrinsically intertwined. But now China and the U.S. appear closer than ever to a full economic breakup as their trade war intensifies. This month, U.S. President Donald Trump raised baseline tariffs on Chinese imports to 145%. The Chinese leader Xi Jinping has come out all guns blazing.
In China, the trade war with the U.S. is being portrayed as a struggle against Western bullying, a test of Chinese resolve, and a battle that only the Communist Party can win. The trade war is the biggest political challenge facing China's paramount leader, Xi Jinping, since the COVID pandemic. Tactically, Xi is using the trade war as an opportunity. On this month's tour of Vietnam, Malaysia, and Cambodia, Xi sold a vision of Beijing as a responsible power, willing to work with regional neighbors to offset the impact of U.S. tariffs.
In the face of shocks to global order, we will stand against unilateralism and protectionism, and together we will safeguard the bright prospects of our Asian family.
China's economy faces strong headwinds. Industry is heavily reliant on exports to help the economy keep growing, and a trade war could lead to a crisis in manufacturing. Consumers are not spending money. China is grappling with a property crisis, soaring youth unemployment, and massive government debt, all of which could lead to tensions and unrest. Short term, the threat to communist rule is not severe. Xi Jinping has already consolidated power around himself and is more powerful than any Chinese leader since founding father Mao Zedong. The party has been successful in running China as it offers continued economic prosperity in exchange for authoritarian, non-democratic rule. But if the trade war stretches into months, sparking a much weaker economy and mass discontent, it could expose vulnerabilities in Xi Jinping's rule.
That report was from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. Deutsche Welle is also available at most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. The Japanese Prime Minister is being criticized for not showing strength against the tariff challenge. The Russian Easter ceasefire in Ukraine was not followed by either side. Israeli citizens are protesting the continued fighting, and Netanyahu rejects a ceasefire. At a Shanghai auto show, Chinese company BYD reveals an electric cars that can travel 250 miles on a 5-minute charge. NHK Japan.
Here in Japan, opposition leaders have slammed Prime Minister Ishiba Shigeru for sending what they call a weak negotiating team to tariff talks with the United States. They say Ishiba should seize the opportunity for Japan to step up as a world leader in free trade. Party leaders held one-on-one debates in the Diet for the first time since October. The head of the largest opposition party criticized the conduct of Ishiba's chief negotiator, Akazawa Ryose, during his meeting with U.S. President Donald Trump at the White House.
He wore a MAGA cap and took a photo with President Trump. That gave a very negative impression of obvious tributary diplomacy.
It's necessary to talk about how Japan and the U.S. can jointly bring about global benefits. In terms of national interests, Minister Akazawa made the best possible response.
Why does Japan only have Akazawa as tariff negotiator? The team is so weak, even though you've called it a national crisis.
I don't think we were ill-prepared. We had made thorough preparations, with all relevant ministries taking part, since before President Trump took office.
But Ishiba did say he would strengthen the negotiating team if needed. Noda questioned the prime minister's commitment toward global free trade.
Now that the U.S. is, very regrettably, lowering the banner of free trade, Japan must take over and hold it up. Japan needs a resolute diplomatic strategy.
We must consider how to mutually secure benefits. Japan must be persuasive on how free trade can lead to mutual happiness.
Japanese officials are considering their potential bargaining chips ahead of further negotiations in Washington. The talks could resume as early as next week.
A ceasefire with Ukraine, declared unilaterally by Russian President Vladimir Putin, has expired. Moscow and Kyiv have accused each other of ignoring the pause in fighting, which was called to mark the Easter holiday. Putin ordered his forces to stop all military activity against Ukraine on Saturday. He said the ceasefire would last from 6 p.m. that day through Sunday, Moscow time. Russia's state-run TASS news agency quotes Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov as saying the ceasefire would not be extended. Russia's defense ministry claims its forces followed the order, but says Ukrainian troops struck Russian positions over 400 times with guns and mortars. It also says Ukraine carried out 900 attacks with quadcopter-style drones. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky posted on social media, claiming Russian forces shelled Ukrainian troops more than 1,800 times. He says Putin's words about the ceasefire were empty. Zelensky is calling on Russia to accept a Ukrainian proposal for a full ceasefire that would last 30 days. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is resisting calls to end the fighting in Gaza. Israelis are continuing to protest, demanding a ceasefire deal to secure the release of the remaining hostages held by Hamas. Talks remain deadlocked after an agreement between the two sides broke down last month. Hamas wants a permanent ceasefire in return for the release of all remaining hostages. Israel has pushed for another temporary truce, with Netanyahu saying he wants to continue the war in Gaza.
If we surrender to Hamas's dictates now, all of the great achievements that we have made thanks to our fighters, thanks to our fallen and wounded heroes, all of these achievements will simply have been for naught.
Israeli demonstrators took to the streets over the weekend. They say their country's military operations in Gaza are endangering the people still held by Hamas. An opinion poll published by an Israeli outlet last month found 69% of Israelis support ending the conflict if it would lead to the release of the remaining hostages.
One of the world's largest auto trade shows, Auto Shanghai 2025, has opened amid escalating trade friction between China and the United States. Automakers from across the globe are rushing to promote their latest models of so-called new energy vehicles, such as EVs. About 1,000 companies are taking part. China's EV giant, BYD, is displaying its latest model and a new technology that enables the vehicle to go 400 kilometers after 5 minutes of charging. Sales of EVs and other new energy models are surging in China due to government subsidies. Last year, total sales, including exports, topped 10 million for the first time. Washington's tariff policies have threatened the future of the world economy, and Japanese automakers are eager to expand their business in China, where market growth is expected to continue. Toyota Motor has announced a plan to set up a company in Shanghai to produce EV models and batteries. Honda's new EV plant, it jointly operates with a major Chinese automaker, began operating in March.
We're aiming to produce new value and increase the satisfaction of our customers in China by using Chinese technology in the field of automation.
Japanese automakers are also joining hands with leading Chinese IT firms to develop software essential for next-generation vehicles. They need to catch up with the Chinese market, which has seen a rapid shift to EVs.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 10 p.m. at 13710 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK is also available at most podcast sites. Next, France 24. Three press reviews and a report. First, a press review on the Italian right-wing president Giorgia Meloni visiting Trump. Then press on the Ukraine talks and the U.S. leaving the event. Press reviews on the complex legacy of Pope Francis. Finally, a report on the retaliations arising from the Pakistani terrorist killing tourist in India-administered part of Kashmir. France 24.
Coverage of Giorgia Meloni's visit to the White House. How has the press been covering that?
Yes, well, let's start with the Italian papers, where it's been on most of the front pages. La Stampa, for example, is reclaiming a British term, a special relationship it has on their front page, highlighting the privileged relationship between Meloni and Trump. The right-leaning paper Libero, has a mission completed on their front page. They explain what they mean in their two-page spread of the story in their paper. They say, quote, Trump accepts invitation to negotiate with EU in Rome with an exceptional Meloni. The article praises the Italian president for having successfully invited Trump to discussions with European leaders on the EU-US trade conflict. Now, the left-leaning paper, Il Fatto Quotidiano, is slightly more critical on their front page. They headline with Trump crowns Meloni, but dismisses her on Kiev. The article talks about a slightly tense moment in discussions where Trump and Meloni did not see eye to eye on Ukraine and military spending. During the meeting, Meloni said that there was an aggressor and an aggressed in the war, which seemed to rattle Trump a little bit. He responded by saying that although Zelensky was not responsible for the war, he was not a great fan of his either. Now, in the States, the New York Times has this headline, Trump welcomes a European leader he likes, Meloni of Italy. The article looks at the similarities between the two leaders and why they might get along. Finally, The Guardian has this article here, focusing as well on their relationship, saying that they speak the same language, despite the slightly awkward moment on Ukraine. It says Meloni has been labelled the Trump whisperer and, quotes, deemed capable of awakening the concealed angels of his nature.
Let's bring in more now on those Ukraine talks. We are hearing more and more details coming into us about the fact that they may have been somewhat downgraded. But Emily Boyle from the Press Review today has been looking at the newspapers, perhaps a little bit more optimism before those talks may have been downgraded. Let's find out exactly what the papers are saying on it, Emily.
Yes, well, the papers are trying to keep up with developments as they happen. It was on the front page of the Daily Telegraph today. Trump to let Putin keep seized land. This article says that Donald Trump's latest peace settlement suggests that Putin can keep all of the territory he seized in Ukraine so far. It's part of the US's 7-point plan to end the war in Ukraine. Crucially, according to this article, it leaves the Ukraine with no US security guarantee. It also involves the US offering formal recognition of Russian sovereignty of Crimea. Now, this has obviously rocked the boat in Ukraine a little bit. The Kyiv Independent has this article today. Zelensky rules out recognizing Crimea as Russian and warns against playing Putin's game. At the same time, the New York Times here is reporting that the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio has announced he would not attend the next stage of the peace talks. The article says that Ukraine's rebuttal and Rubio's snub cast doubts over how much progress is actually being made. Meanwhile, the Kyiv Post here has this today. They're reporting that Putin is open to direct talks with Ukraine. It says that the failed Easter ceasefire and Trump's threats to walk away from talks has caused Putin to do a 180. Putin had previously announced he would only negotiate with what he calls the Ukrainian regime if Zelensky stood down. Now let's take a look at Politico. They're looking at the Ukrainian response. It says Ukraine is ready to negotiate, but only if Russia agrees to a ceasefire first. The article also calls that a significant change of tone. Ukraine had previously refused to engage in any direct talks with the Kremlin. This comes as negotiators meet in London for ceasefire talks today. The Guardian is covering that summit. They're reporting on encouraging signals going into the talks, but they highlight that there's been no breakthrough since talks mediated by the White House began about 3 months ago now.
So beyond defining our memory of Pope Francis, then, how the papers have been discussing his legacy?
Exactly. If you look beyond the front pages, the press is debating what exactly that legacy might be. Let's start off in Argentina, where he was from. Clarín, the paper Clarín here, says his papacy will have been one of contradictions. It says he's been often criticised for questioning untouchable truths, but his tendency to speak frankly was also what he was celebrated for, going from contradictions to complexities. Politico had this headline, "The Complex Legacy of Pope Francis," with a more critical view. They call it a dramatic papacy, frustrating for both conservatives and progressives. The article says he was elected to clean up the church, but that he leaves it an institution that hasn't addressed its own failings, from priestly abuse to the misuse of Vatican finances. It also looks at the Pope's reforms, saying that although he appointed 110 of the 138 cardinals who will elect his successor, they might not necessarily support his view for the future now he's gone. In France, finally, the Libé had this article, "Un pape moins révolutionnaire qu'espéré," a pope less revolutionary than hoped. They highlight his activism for the rights of migrants, his scepticism of capitalism, and his vocal political stances, for instance, against Donald Trump most recently. But this article says that despite his attempts to change the priorities of the church, it has remained stuck on questions about sexual morals and abortion. Their greatest disappointment is his failure, for instance, to open the church up to women. It says the Pope leaves behind a fragile heritage which might not survive his next successor.
All Pakistani citizens must leave India by April 29th. That's New Delhi's latest retaliation, part of a wave of punitive measures for the deadly attack in Kashmir on Tuesday that killed 26 people. India also cancelled all visa services for Pakistani citizens and advised Indian nationals to leave the neighbouring country as soon as possible. New Delhi has accused Islamabad of supporting what it calls cross-border terrorism.
India will identify, track and punish every terrorist and their backer. We will pursue them to the ends of the earth. India's spirit will never be broken by terrorism.
Islamabad responded immediately, announcing a string of tit-for-tat measures.
Pakistan declares the Indian Defense, Naval and Air Advisors in Islamabad persona non grata. They are directed to leave Pakistan immediately.
The statement added that Pakistan is shutting its borders, cancelling trade and closing airspace to Indian-owned or operated airlines. Islamabad also cancelled visas for Indian nationals. Relations between the two nuclear powers are at their lowest level in years. Tensions soared after Tuesday's attack when a gunman opened fire on tourists in the India-administered part of Kashmir. The previously unknown group Kashmir Resistance claimed responsibility for the assault. The shooting was the deadliest civilian attack in the region in 25 years, and the victims were mostly tourists. Some analysts warn that the new measures are only the opening act, pointing to a serious risk of a military response.
Those press reviews and report were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, and most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program, there's a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show on the airwaves. Please join the fun. And if you're listening on a public radio station, they're soon going to have an even greater need for your support as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The Colombian President Petro announced that the U.S. government has revoked his visa following his criticism of sending migrants to the prison in El Salvador. Mike Huckabee, newly appointed ambassador to Israel, broke into the Al-Aqsa Mosque and left a note from Trump in the Western Wall. UNRWA says that Israel has killed 600 children in Gaza since March 18th, and that the situation for Palestinians is the worst it has been since the war began. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Colombian President Gustavo Petro has announced that the U.S. government has revoked his visa, and therefore he can no longer travel to the United States. I can't go to the United States anymore because I think they revoked my visa. I didn't need a visa, but oh well. I've already seen Donald Duck several times, so I'm going to see other things other than Donald Duck, said the Colombian president during a cabinet meeting. Gustavo Petro made reference to a visa when commenting that Finance Minister Herman Avila traveled to the United States to participate in the meetings of the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and the World Bank, the WB, this week. The Colombian president did not offer details about the reasons why the United States has revoked his visa, but before commenting on that situation, he spoke about a recent decision by the U.S. Supreme Court, apparently related to the deportation of Venezuelans to El Salvador. He has been very vocal in his opposition to immigrants and migrants being deported to El Salvador. There are two important contextual facts as a backdrop to President Petro's announcement. First, the Colombian president also engaged in an argument, a very severe argument, with Donald Trump earlier this year that almost resulted in the severance of diplomatic relations between the two countries. Second, Colombia could be decertified in its fight against drugs by the United States following an increase, apparently, in the number of hectares of illicit crops. The Colombian government has developed a strategy to avoid the scenario, but if that country confirms that it revoked Petro's visa, decertification will certainly be the next step. If Petro's version is confirmed, he would be the second sitting Colombian president to have his visa revoked by the U.S. government. In the mid-1990s, the U.S. government revoked the visa of then-President Ernesto Samper after it was falsely reported the drug money had been used in his election campaign. Mike Huckabee, the newly appointed U.S. ambassador to the Israeli-occupied territories, in a provocative move, broke into the Al-Aqsa Mosque, along with Israeli settlers, and performed rituals at the Abu Qawwal one day after assuming his post. Huckabee, a radical Christian Zionist who once said, "There's really no such thing as a Palestinian," placed a handwritten note into the cracks of the wall, a long-standing Zionist tradition, at the occupied site. Huckabee said that the message came directly from U.S. President Donald Trump. "President Trump wrote this himself and sent me here to place it. He told reporters, 'I'm doing this with the president's best wishes.'" Huckabee, a devout Christian Zionist, firmly embraces the Zionist narrative that the occupied Palestinian territories belong to the Jewish people. In 2008, on the presidential campaign trail in Massachusetts, he had extremely inflammatory remarks that triggered a severe backlash. He said, "There's really no such thing as a Palestinian," dehumanizing Palestinians, calling their identity a political tool to try and force land away from Israel. UNRWA, the United Nations Relief Agency, says that Israel has massacred nearly 600 children across Gaza since the regime resumed its genocidal war last month. Citing figures released by the United Nations Children Agency, UNICEF, UNRWA said that over 1,600 other children were also injured since Israel resumed its assaults on the 18th of March. UNRWA warned that the humanitarian situation in Gaza has deteriorated significantly, describing it as likely the worst it has been since the outbreak of the brutal, genocidal Israeli military campaign in October of 2023. UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, said that Palestinian children had experienced a wave after wave of very deadly airstrikes over the past several days. "Images of children burning while sheltering in makeshift tents should shake us all to our core," said Catherine Russell, the UNICEF executive director, in a recent social media post. Ravina Shamdasani, spokeswoman for the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights in Geneva, recently reported that 36 of the 224 documented Israeli airstrikes in Gaza between the 18th of March and the 9th of April involved deaths that were only women and children. Her UNRWA chief, Felipe Lazzarini, also described the situation in Gaza as a post-apocalyptic killing zone, warning the international community must do everything possible to act on Israel's renewed war and stop the genocide against Gaza. At least 1,864 Gazans have been killed, nearly 5,000 wounded since Israel renewed its intensive attacks and strikes last month on March the 18th. Overall, more than 51,200 Palestinians, the majority of them women and children, have been killed in Gaza.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.